You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Do we now have a state-mandated form of liberal religion whose doctrines are now acceptable in the state?
When you have kids, there's a whole lot more to call you out of your self-centeredness.
The reason we stand opposed to sin is not because it hurts me. The reason we stand opposed to sin is because it hurts the sinner.
The Lord's mercy is opened up to us by the death of Jesus on the cross, so that the Christian looks at everything in this life and understands it as a gift from God.
UC Berkeley alumni who still support the freedom of speech, love, issues, etc. Fiat Lux and Go Bears.
It has been a little bit more than a week since Republican Karen Handel defeated Democrat John Ossoff in Georgia's 6th Congressional District. There was a vacancy there that was left by a Trump appointment and a special election, one of two that was held the same week. And, well, despite the polls and despite assurances that this was going to be a referendum on Donald Trump, it turned out to be a victory for Karen Handel. The question is, if she had been running against a pro-life Democrat there in Georgia, would she have won? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, June 28th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about the Georgia House race and pro-life Democrats with Terry Mattingly in the first half hour of the program. A little bit later, Dr. Peter Scare joins us to talk about and to react to the new poll that we discussed recently on evangelical attitudes regarding same-sex marriage. They are changing, and there's a generation gap reflected in those changes and in those differences of what evangelicals, depending on your age, think about same-sex marriage. Joy Pullman of The Federalist will be our guest to talk about the Supreme Court's mixed message on religious liberty and education. And then Dr. Uwe Simonetto, a native of Germany and a former religion editor for United Press International, will join us to talk about German Chancellor Angela Merkel's decision to allow a vote on homosexual marriage. Now, you can join us with questions or comments over the course of the next 2 hours of Issues Etc. Give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. And as always, the Issues Etc. comment line for our beloved on-demand listeners, 618-223-8382. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about the Georgia House race and pro-life Democrats. He's a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So had Karen Handel been running against a pro-life Democrat, would she have been able to defeat such an opponent?
Well, of course, there's no way to predict that completely. But if you look at previous records in Bible Belt or red-colored districts, you know, in the United States, the evidence would seem to be that a pro-life Democrat would have certainly have had a much better chance against her. I think of all the statistics that surrounded this particular district and why the Democrats went after it so hard was the fact that Trump barely won this district. I think he won it by, if I remember correctly, something like 1.5 or 1.8%, whereas in a previous election, Romney had won it like upper double digits, might have even been 20%. This is a historic Republican district. So the Democrats thought they could take it because it was a district that was so weak on Trump. So they thought the entire election was going to be about Trump and missed the fact that they were running against a woman with a very strong track record on issues of abortion and life, someone who had been at the center of the breast cancer versus Planned Parenthood fight, the Susan G. Komen for the Cure story a couple of years before. And she had a very high identity in Georgia politics, and she was not overwhelmingly popular, but they paired her up against someone who didn't even live in the district where he was running, and someone with really hard left views on every conceivable social issue. And trust me, I hunted. I wish I could contrast their views on issues related to religious liberty, but there was so little coverage of that topic that I can't really give you a comparison. But the point was, rather than running a conservative Southern Democrat against this woman, they came at her with a liberal Democrat who kind of represented the new Bernie, even left side of Hillary coalition at the heart of the current Democratic Party, and a race that they thought they had every chance to win. Running against Trump, they didn't win. This is an important issue for a group like Democrats for Life, who wants to see the Democratic Party become more open to working with Democrats who not only are explicitly pro-life, but even Democrats who are willing to compromise on issues related to abortion funding, third trimester abortion, and gender selection abortion, and really hot button topics like this. It's important to Democrats for Life, but I would argue that another reason you need to watch these stories is, quite frankly, pro-life people need to care about this story as well, for the simple reason that there are parts of the country, like the upper Midwest, and in intensely Latino districts across the nation, where a pro-life Democrat might be able to put pro-life votes into the House of Representatives, or maybe even in a miracle, the Senate, that a Republican never would. And the question I keep asking people is, stop and think about this. How will meaningful legislation on pro-life issues, or even meaningful compromises on issues related to pro-life issues like euthanasia and whatever, how will you ever get meaningful compromises if there are no Democratic votes who vote for it? Think about that for a second.
I mean, it sounds like there, as long as there's a two-party system, there wouldn't be compromise at all.
Well, if you have two parties, especially since the Republican Party is divided on abortion and is divided on euthanasia, when you actually look at the makeup of their legislators, you know, in the House and Senate, the party, you know, the platform of the Republican Party is explicitly pro-life. But when you look at who the Republican Party is, it's the Republicans who are divided on abortion. When you look at their elected officials and the leaders of their party, the Democrats stand united. So how do pro-lifers and religious conservatives think they're going to win if there are never any pro-life Democrats? I'll give full credit. A couple of years ago, Marvin Alasky at World Magazine wrote a piece on this and simply noted how endangered pro-life Democrats were, and I believe made this exact point, that there really isn't any hope for compromise until you have pro-life constituencies within both parties at the level of elected officials. Now, it's already clear from polling by the Pew Forum and a bunch of other people that there are lots of pro-life votes still in the Democratic Party. primarily among religious believers in African American, Catholic, Latino, and middle class pews, so to speak. Some people would say that one-third of Democratic voters are strongly pro-life. I've seen figures that are higher if you count people who oppose certain things that are currently legal under our abortion law regime, such as gender selection abortion, third trimester abortion, etc. So things are really complex when you look at the American people. But when you look at who gets elected, things aren't very complex at all. And that's what makes this race in Georgia so interesting to me. It's an example of a place where the Democrats, quite frankly, didn't give themselves a chance to win.
So broadening that out to the Democratic Party in general, the same DNC chairman, Tom Perez, who seems like only weeks ago was chiding the Democratic Party for not towing the line on kind of an absolutist pro-abortion position, as far as I can tell, recently met with the group you just mentioned, Democrats for Life.
Yeah, let's flash back for a second so that our listeners know exactly what we're talking about here. Democratic National Committee Chairman Tom Perez, a number of weeks ago in an interview, said every Democrat, like every American, should support a woman's right to make her own choices about her body and her health. This is not negotiable and should not change city by city or state by state. Now, that would obviously include district by district as well, correct? And then later he said, every candidate who runs as a Democrat should support abortion rights. Well, I mean, if you're a pro-life Democrat, what does that sound like?
Well, it sounds like I'm not welcome in my party anymore.
It sort of sounds like get lost. And the leaders of Democrats for Life were just infuriated. I did an interview for a column about that time with Kristen Day, the leader of Democrats for Life. But there were others who, I mean, on what some people would consider the progressive bleeding edge of Catholic thought in America, people like Father James Martin, who's best known for his honorary role as the Catholic chaplain to the Colbert Report years ago, and a close friend of Stephen Colbert. So he would represent the Catholic left in many, many ways. And he tweeted out when Perez said that, well, good to know that Democrats could be just as self-destructive as Republicans. It really was an amazing quote. So now we've had a meeting. Apparently a meeting took place. We're talking on Wednesday. I believe the meeting took place yesterday, on Tuesday of this week. And a meeting took place. The only problem is now try to find any coverage of it. I found a story, which I'll put up at Get Religion later in the week. I found a story at the website called Crux, which is dedicated to in-depth coverage of Catholic issues. But since when is this a Catholic issue alone? I mean, in our day and age, there are just as many or more evangelical Christians, of white and otherwise, who are pro-life as a percentage than there is of people in America who identify themselves as Catholics. So once again, we face the question, if a meeting was held between Democrats for Life and Perez, where's the news coverage?
Do we know what this means, other than maybe Tom Perez has kind of seen the strategic error of his ways and needs to kind of reunite the party a little bit? Do we know what this means?
Well, once again, flashback a number of years. I'm trying to remember when Howard Dean was chairman of the Democratic Party.
Not too long ago,
a decade or so. And Dean instituted what he called a 50-state strategy to try to retake the House of Reps. And what this simply meant is we're going to run Democrats who represent the Democrats in their district, not just the views of the National Party. We're going to allow some dissent within our party. And everybody knew what issues he was talking about. And they won a bunch of races that they wouldn't have won otherwise, and Democrats for Life argues that they could have never passed Obamacare without the pro-life Democrats that they won in the Howard, the slots that they won in the Howard Dean era under that 50-state plan, which allowed some flexibility in terms of where people stood on the party platform. Republicans have been 50-state all along. You've got all kinds of liberal Republicans who disagree with their party on, you know, on gay rights, on abortion, and whatever. Republicans seem to have no scruples on that in most of the country. Now, what's fascinating is that in the Obamacare negotiations, they, of course, ended up passing things in Obamacare that the pro-life Democrats disagreed with on abortion funding, et cetera, and the party really put the screws to them and forced them to vote on compromises that turned out really not to be compromises. And those pro-life Democrats immediately get knocked out of the House in their next election in their districts, and you're back to Republicans holding those seats again. So it was like the 50-state plan worked long enough to pass Obamacare, some version of Obamacare, and then they discarded it again and went back to purity. I'm trying to think of the right word here, ideological purity on that issue within their party. You can chart all of this just simply by looking at the website of Democrats for Life. They have all kinds of things that show this. For myself, one of the definitive statements of this whole argument was in a book years ago by the late governor of Pennsylvania, Robert Casey, a great pro-life, genuinely economically and labor progressive Democrat, elected as governor of Pennsylvania. And he wrote a book called Fighting for Life, which was about his own health battles, the battles that eventually killed him. One of the only people who lived for a number of years with both, I believe, a heart transplant and both lungs transplanted. Bob Casey was a hero to pro-life Democrats, most famous for being not allowed to speak against the platform on abortion when the Democratic National Committee was held in Philadelphia. So they didn't let the democratically elected governor of the state of Pennsylvania rise on the floor and speak at an open microphone in his own state because he disagreed on the issue of abortion. So Casey's book, Fighting for Life, includes a chapter which analyzes the whole history of how much better the Democratic Party has fared both in governors, state legislatures, and the House of Reps when they allowed pro-lifers to be part of the party life. Where will this debate go? Well, I guess we'll find out when someone decides to cover this.
So that makes a case, before we take this break here, that makes the case, as is the lead of the Crux article you were talking about, that electorally the Democratic Party has suffered for the sake of its absolutist view on abortion.
Yeah. Once again, let me stress, when you look at the level of party leadership and its elected officials, with a number of exceptions, you can almost count on one or at most two hands. The Democratic Party knows exactly what it believes on abortion and is willing to fight for it, while it's the Republican Party that remains functionally divided at the level of party leadership and elected officials. I don't think that's what most of our listeners would think, but if you sit down and look at the numbers, that can be shown to be true.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about the Georgia House race and pro-life Democrats on this Wednesday, June the 28th. When we come back, if that's the case, then it seems clear what the Democratic Party should do in terms of a hope for electoral success. The question is, will they do it? We'll be right back.
Are
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on beautiful children's Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Children are entitled to a relationship with both of their parents, and they're entitled to know who they are.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute talking about her presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you take that entitlement as basic and reason backwards from that, what you'll end up with is the whole traditional Christian sexual morality. Get married, stay married, and only have sex with the person you're married to.
You can meet and hear Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse making the case against the sexual revolution at the Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. Child care is free. For more information, look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Terry Mattingly of the King's College in New York City and the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate about Georgia House race, that Georgia House race last week, and pro-life Democrats. Okay, so Terry, it seems clear if I were just, you know, kind of the average paid consultant to Tom Perez and the Democratic leadership to say, look, guys, you got to go back to where you were before, broaden your tent, make your umbrella bigger and welcome them back in, these pro-life Democrats. Then we can have true compromise and then you guys can actually maybe win a few elections for a change. Do you think they will do that?
Well, you've got to ask yourself, why did they run the candidate that they ran in Georgia this time? And what are the factors that have changed in the last 15 to 20 years that might have driven that decision? This leads us to the Bernie revolt against Hillary Clinton, and Hillary Clinton is not exactly a conservative on social issues. Or, I mean, you know, Nancy Pelosi is not exactly a liberal. Not exactly a conservative, I should say, on social issues, including abortion. So what's going on here? To me, I think the key fact is something that listeners will remember we've discussed in the past. A couple of years ago, when the Pew Forum released that major study that led to all of the headlines about the religiously unaffiliated and the Americans who were calling themselves nuns, N-O-N-E-S, as in no religious affiliation. Out of that data, down in the fine print, the scholar and pollster John Green noted an interesting trend, and that was that within the Democratic Party, the largest identifiable subgroup in the party was now religiously unaffiliated, secular, atheist, vaguely spiritual, and genuine dedicated religious liberals, be they Jewish or Christian or whatever. And that if you put those groups together, you now had the largest identifiable subgroup within the current Democratic Party. What he asked at that time, and John Green is a liberal himself, John Green asked, will the Democratic Party be able to deal with that powerful voting bloc? or will they struggle in the same way that the Republican Party struggles to keep the religious right happy? So if you take what John Green is saying literally, this leads to the next question. What unites the secular, religiously unaffiliated, atheist, agnostic, vaguely spiritual, true religious left voting bloc? What ties them together? And the data in that still must-reading survey from the Pew Forum, the data is what unites them more than anything else is opposition to traditional Judeo-Christian teachings on issues of sexual morality, abortion, and other moral issues. So now do you begin to see the shape of your answer to your question?
I think so.
Why would he have to run such a strong liberal, by the way, an extremely secular candidate? The fact that the man was Jewish is probably not as important, that when faced with questions about his religious faith, he had absolutely nothing to articulate, not even to the degree that Bernie Sanders was able to articulate his religious views when on a campus like Liberty University. You were dealing with a man who clearly, the fact that he was Jewish in heritage was not nearly as important as that he was committed and secular. And by the way, if you're running in the suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia, and you get a question, by the way, when are you going to marry the girlfriend you've been living with for 10 or 12 years? That's a question you're much more likely to hear outside of Atlanta than in New York City, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So once again, we're facing, does this candidate fit the district in which he's running? Which, once again, highly symbolic, is not the district in which he lives. So how did they get this candidate is the huge question. I think you would have to say they needed a candidate who appealed to the current leadership of the Democratic Party, and the current leadership of the Democratic Party knows that it cannot afford to tick off people whose North Star is Planned Parenthood and issues related to sexual liberty, to use a term that's increasingly in the news. I think that's how you get this candidate. And so you have to ask yourself, who's going to be courageous enough to turn to that constituency group, the largest identifiable constituency group in your party, and say, okay, you guys, you're going to need to compromise. Going to be an easy task.
Two final questions for you, Terry. And I guess what I'm wondering here is, with this kind of chosen direction, or so it appears, the chosen direction of the Democratic Party, is the Republican Party, divided as you have said it is, going to be able to capitalize on that? Or is their momentum against the Democrats just kind of in spite of themselves on this issue?
I don't know. I can't predict Republicans. I can't predict why, when you control the House, the Senate, and the White House, you can't come up with an articulated position on health care. Or, I mean, obviously there isn't unity in the Republican Party. Yet at the same time, that party knows that it can't afford to completely write off the pro-lifers and the religious conservatives, moral traditionalists, whatever name you want to use, values voters was hot there for a while. But at the same time, what we've seen in the battles over sexual liberty issues versus religious liberty issues is the current Republican Party is also scared stiff to take on big business and American corporations. And who are now the biggest, richest corporations in American life, other than the tech companies and things of that sort? And these are groups that represent not just the left. This is the bleeding left of American political thought on moral and cultural issues. So do Republicans want to run against the emerging world of big business? You might remember that that's a change in the landscape that we saw in states like Indiana and Kentucky, in battles, North Carolina, in battles over religious liberty legislation. That plays a key role in Rod Dreher's book, The Benedict Option, for one reason why he thinks that even with a few key victories at the Supreme Court, maybe, we're certainly going to see another big one one way or the other coming up here in the near future on the Masterpiece Cake Shop story. The trends are not looking good for a corporate-driven Republican Party to be able to stand united on this issue. You see that point?
Yeah, Terry, before we let you go, post-election, who is more politically tone-deaf? The Democratic Party leadership or the New York Times?
Oh, tone-deaf on religion or tone-deaf on America?
Tone-deaf on America, including religion.
Well, okay, what's the difference between the New York Times editorial page and the leadership of the Democratic Party?
Well, I mean, assuming there is one.
I'm not willing to assume that at this point. I would say that the editorial pages of the New York Times at this moment, with the possible exception of Ross Douthat and a couple of others, are the sacred pages of the secular coalition at the heart of the Democratic National Party. Which means if the editor of the New York Times says, let's face it, the elite papers don't get religion, at that point, to quote the headline in that ran the other day, I believe it was in the Washington Post, someone wrote a Democrat wrote a piece that said, the Democrats' religion problem. Now, how many years now have we been reading that headline? They know that this problem exists. The issue is because of the makeup of their core voters. They can't do anything about it. Just like Republicans know that in the end, they have no shot in most of America at the grassroots. If you look at their national presidential maps, if they completely tick off moral conservatives, it's just a really interesting puzzle we've got right now.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here again.
On the other side of the break, Dr. Peter Scarer joins us. We're going to talk about a new poll on evangelical attitudes about same-sex marriage and the church's response.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
If you've ever wondered why Amazing Grace is the national anthem of funerals or pondered the state of your eternal soul after you die, the Lutheran Witness has you covered. Check out the June and July issue of the Lutheran Witness to learn more about death, dying, heaven, and hell. Not a subscriber? Visit cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness for a special offer of $6.99 for six digital or print issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
The Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education invites you to attend our Reformation Summer Conference, July 11 through 13, 2017, in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Focused on truth and education. Speakers include the Reverend Rolf Preuss, Dr. Angus Manouge, and Dr. Thomas Korchak. Enjoy this year's unique banquet experience at a Wyoming bison ranch. Visit ccle.org for more speakers and information. That's ccle.org.
Holy Cross Lutheran Church, Moline, Illinois, invites you to join us in receiving the Lord's gifts in word and sacrament. Sunday services are at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m., with Bible class and Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. We are located in the Quad Cities at 4107 21st Avenue, Moline, Illinois. Welcome in the name of our Lord.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you've ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Synod and have wondered why more people from my congregation aren't here, check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so the pastors of your circuit can organize, promote, and present a seminar that appeals to the members of your congregation, even the youth, is provided free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org and click on the blue box, or check us out on Facebook.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People at lutheracademy.com.